You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
I want you to be my VP. I want you. You're my vice.
Well, George, I'm the CEO of a large company. And I have been Secretary of Defense. And I have been White House Chief of Staff. The vice presidency is a mostly symbolic job. However, if we came to a different understanding, I can handle the more mundane jobs, overseeing bureaucracy, military, energy, and foreign policy.
Yeah, right. I like that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kel Smith. So, about 3 weeks ago, I did a discussion video for Bad Symphony Productions with Brandon Cooley, and we talked about Vice, its politics, and overall the quality of the film. And so this is the discussion portion of that. And I was just wanting to share it to everybody on the network, since it technically still ran as a podcast. But other than that, this is going to be technically my last review of 2018 of a 2018 film. And I thought I would post this just before I post my best of 2018, which will come in just a little while later tonight. Thanks everyone for a great 2018. Thanks for sticking with me through this, and please enjoy my review of Vice, as well as our discussion, mine and Brandon's discussion on Vice. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Here we go.
Is recording.
Whenever you're ready, just go ahead and say recording. All right, I'm going to do two claps, hopefully it'll come through. All right, that should be good. Okay, and so, Kale, the first movie we're doing is Vice, and I thought it was a great movie to start off with for our review show on this channel, because we both love movies, and also we worked in the 2018 midterms this last year. With some political ads and some speeches by local candidates. And so we, for me personally, I'm a political science major, and you've helped me on those videos, so it's kind of a fitting movie to start off with. A movie that is both unique in its filmmaking and editing, but also about politics, and kind of about politics over the last 20, 30 years, or 40 years even, going back as far as the 70s, late 60s. So just a quick, like, kind of... What did you think of Vice overall? What was your expectations going into it? That's a better way to start off. What did you expect?
Well, first of all, this is quite funny that we're starting off our review channel by reviewing a political movie. Very topical, very very bold in our way. Rather than review the DC comic movie or the new Bumblebee movie, we're going to review the political movie that's making all the money at the box office. Wink, wink. So I've been hearing about this project essentially since The Big Short came out, because there's been, you know, kind of talk ever since The Big Short that, you know, Adam McKay had kind of been wanting to do, you know, another, he kind of liked, you know, the flavors he kind of got to play with on The Big Short of doing, you know, a drama, but also a comedy, kind of, and also doing kind of a political insight movie, or I guess The Big Short is kind of more like an economic insight. But for him, he loved the idea of like bringing kind of like what he wanted to say about government and, you know, and kind of the whole, you know, capitalistic structure. He's bringing in, he kind of loved that, you know, doing it in a way of, in an entertaining way. Like, his whole big thing is, in order to, you know, teach people, we have to make the lesson entertaining. So, for McKay, so going into Vice, I knew that this was going to be an entertaining movie. I was very skeptical in, you know, how the comedy would play out, because, again, you're making a comedy about, because, again, you know, Vice could easily have been a comedy about, you know, isn't this funny that, you know, people are, you know, in the background or, you know, off camera just being miserable or being affected by the consequences of these very powerful people, kind of in the same way that Wolf of Wall Street is. So, but when you watch Vice, it's a much more drama-filled movie. Yes, there's the style of cutting to, you know, cutting to things that, you know, make it the point very blatant. However, most of the movie is a set drama. It is, you know, it's essentially Adam McKay's The Godfather. The only difference between The Godfather and Vice is that, you know, it's that you don't have Gordon Wallace's barely visible cinematography, and Vice is very much, you know, it's a more playful direction. It's much more, not comedic, but playful in its direction and style, in terms of what it's trying to do. So, and that's why I feel like, and that's why I kind of feel like, honestly, Vice, you know, is kind of the winner in what it's trying to do. It's playful, but it doesn't make joke or make light of the actions that are in, that are being taken place in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. Later on in the review, I was going to compare it to The Big Short. I was going to have a whole talking about the editing style. But you mentioned two movies there, comparing it to The Godfather and Wolf of Wall Street. And The Godfather's an interesting choice because tonally they're different, but the character, as a character study, they're kind of similar. True. But The Wolf of Wall Street, though, I would definitely compare it to, in terms of the tone and the way it's doing the comedy of it. And, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, as you know, is one of my favorite movies of this decade. And so I would compare it to that. I wouldn't say it reaches that height in terms of the direction, but I do think it's excellent at showing the rise and fall of a character. And what was so hard for Adam McKay to do in this movie, he could have slipped into doing a parody of the Bush administration. And I think that the worst it could have been was W by Oliver Stone. Have you seen that? He did it actually the same year Bush left. It was 2008 he made that movie.
So, I did actually see W, but it was like right, I think it was just as it was coming out on DVD. So it's above that 10-year mark, and I was a teenager, so I didn't quite get everything that was going on, and I really wasn't into the political, you know, and I wasn't like a huge, less to say I was 14 and really wasn't, you know, caring about Oliver Stone politics at the time.
I saw it 6 or 7 years ago, and I didn't like it at all. I thought, even though it wasn't the fact that Stone was trying to appeal to liberals and like giving them a movie they could, you know, be entertained by. It wasn't that. It was just, it had nothing to say. It was just, the only thing it had to say was Bush made mistakes. You know, mistakes were made. That was it. And this movie isn't like that. It's much more, has more depth than W. Cause even, I mean, even the love story, you could say, between Dick Cheney and Lynn Cheney is very convincing. I mean, it's very well done. The acting, which we'll get to in a second, is phenomenal. I mean, it's just the rise and fall, they do very well. And also what makes this movie so hard is because there's not, like, Dick Cheney, I wouldn't say he's mysterious, but there's no image we have of him in, like, pop culture, really. We know everybody knows he shot a guy once in that hunting thing. And they kind of know his mannerisms, but the only impersonation I can think of would be like Dana Carvey's impersonation, which is just kind of a joke. It's not really meant to be, you know, it's just, he's not like other figures in pop culture in terms of politics. So in order to present him on film, how do you do that in a way that's both like, do you make him vulnerable? Do you make him just this kind of villain? Do you make him, you know, and they didn't, they kind of went something in between there, which,
well, they made him a character. They made him a character where you see, you know, his rise to power, and, you know, and you see him, we basically open the movie with Chaney at his lowest point, where his mm-hmm. wife is about to leave him. He's a drunk. He was kicked out of Yale. Yeah, is that Yale, right? It's been a week since I saw the movie.
Yeah, I think it was Yale. Yeah, okay. it sounds right.
He's working, you know, an electrician job that's very dangerous. I mean, we see the guy with, you know, the broken leg. I mean, it's you know, he's kind of at his, you know, wits end, and, you know, and it's his wife. And this is why I kind of like the movie, is because I love how Lynn Chaney, she's not just the supportive wife. She has her own character and agency.
Yeah.
And she has her own role in, you know, in how this whole thing, you know, in how this whole thing played out. And so we see him as we go. So we see him have his own rise to power. Unfortunately, his rise to power led to a lot of, you know, a lot of consequences that, you know, devastated a lot of the Mideast. And also
put us in. And, you know, Amy Adams. Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
But also put our country kind of in a terrible position in foreign policy, and put even, you know, George W. Bush, who, quite frankly, is responsible, is equally as responsible, but it made the administration in this movie, you know, look awful. It made everything, you know, it paints a terrible picture. That's what I'm getting at. Sorry, I'm a little tired. Yeah. That's why I'm jumping over my words.
It's fine. It's all right. No problem. Yeah, I was going to say that Amy Adams does a great job, because usually in biopics, the weakest point is the wife character, or the spouse. You know, the marriage is the weakest part usually of biopics, because, you know, it just has nothing really to add to it, typically, even the great biopics. But just mentioning the cast, though, the other actors, Steve Carell does a good job. I really like his performance. Now, I've heard some people say his intro, I think his intro does remind me of Michael Scott from The Office a bit. Even though I laughed while watching it, I do more get of that a demented, comparison. I've seen that.
It's more of a demented Michael Scott.
And before I get to Sam Rockwell playing Bush, Colin Powell, I actually really enjoyed in this, because it's very brief. He's not in it for very long. But there's a moment between Steve Carell and the two of them are sitting in the Oval Office, and there's just this Tyler argument Perry? Going on about whether or not Colin Powell, Tyler Perry, yeah, I was trying to think of the actor's name. There's an argument of whether or not Colin Powell should go on TV at the UN, and not TV, but at the UN, and convince the world, you know, the world leaders, that they have weapons of mass destruction, you know. And there's this great moment where, I mean, they're just arguing, and Steve Carell, playing Rumsfeld's like, oh, come on, go on TV, you pansy. It's just, it's so funny. I can't remember what words. They're just arguing, and they're like, it's almost like an argument in the playground. You know, it's, and that's the kind of comedy that it works in the movie. Sometimes it doesn't. I'm not a fan of the Shakespeare scene where they're in bed quoting.
It's not even quoting.
I get the joke, what they're going for, but.
It's not necessarily quoting. Yeah. It's they're reading. It's that. You know, they're playing out the scene as a way Shakespeare would write it.
That's yeah, how, and I get they're making fun of biopics. It is, yeah, and they're making fun of how highbrow some biopics are, and how they would, you might do that, you know. But there's another scene, too, where they cut to the credits halfway through before he gets the call to be the VP. and that went on for a bit too long as well. I mean, it's kind of funny. I laughed at first, but when they kept rolling the credits, I'm like, okay, let's move on. You know, we get it. There's a few other moments where the editing, well, we'll talk about that later, but, and the last actor I was going to mention was Sam Rockwell playing Bush. And he did a good job as well, because you immediately think of Will Ferrell playing Bush in SNL. You think, okay, is this going to be a caricature? Is it going to be, you know, what is it going to be like? And Sam Rockwell does a good job of just showing how, you know, Bush just was not very educated in foreign policy in terms of being, which is what the president has to be. He has to represent the U.S. Yeah, that's the first job of the president. And he was gullible. He let Dick Cheney kind of manipulate him into, you know, being this, you know, president who lets VP kind of run half of the job, essentially. And there's a great moment, too, where the first time Bush asked Cheney to be the VP, he's just turning him down. And Cheney's trying to read his body language, you know. Trying to see, okay, so what is this guy? Why is he running for president? Why is he wanting me? Like, what? It's a great, the close-ups are perfect. In terms of trying to read people's body language, it really was well done.
And then he, you know, strikes his own, like, business deal in the next scene. Or in the next, you know, encounter, in a way. Like,
yeah,
his own.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course McKay is having fun with the editing, you know, by cutting back and forth with Cheney, you know, throwing a hook and then baiting him, and then with literal a hook and bait, and then when, you know, he's got him, the hook is going, you see the reel. It's all really well done. It's a great moment of laughter, because because it's beating you over the head, but it works for what the film is going for. The movie's not trying to be subtle. It's trying to be loud and but also be entertaining. Because it knows how important. Knows how important it is.
Yeah. And we didn't even mention Christian Bale, really. His performance is just astounding. I mean, besides looking exactly like Dick Cheney, I mean, his mannerisms are spot on. Expressions, the way he speaks, just everything. And, I think he's definitely my pick to win Best Actor at the Oscars this year. I mean, that's I mean, do you have anything to say about it? I mean, I think everybody loves his performance. I mean, kind of like Gary Oldman in last year in Darkest Hour. It's just, it's spot on, you know.
I think even Christian Bale goes even further than Gary Oldman did, because I mean, you're right. For Bale, he had to change his whole being. I mean, when you see Christian Bale in interviews and in the spotlight, you would not. It's a complete transformation. It's not, you know, just put me in a fat suit and stilts and put old makeup on. It's, I mean, he's actually gained the weight and made himself bald. I mean, there's also some prosthetics. They had to make his head a little rounder, but and add a little bit more wrinkles and stuff. But still, it's a full transformation where he's having to change his voice. He's really trying to channel Dick Cheney in all the ways he can. So it's an even more incredible performance, in my opinion, than The Darkest Hour. I think I would put it for, you know, a massive running, but at this point, I mean, there's also two other great best actor performances, in Ryan Gosling and Bradley Cooper. Mm-hmm. So I don't know at this point. I just know that now there's three really good contenders. And also, we should mention to the listeners, our viewers, we are recording this as the Golden Globes is happening. So who knows what... So we don't quite know who is in the front runner at this point. And maybe we'll find out during this show, but still, we're kind of in the dark on, you know, right now, as I'm speaking, what's happening in the Oscar race.
Yeah, and I don't take the awards that seriously nowadays, but it's always fun to guess and debate about who should win what, and especially if it's an actor that does such a good job and, you know, puts in the work, which Christian Bale always does. The cast is great. So comparing this to The Big Short, we did that earlier a bit. The editing style was very similar. I think it's the same editor, if I'm not mistaken. And he treats the... It's funny because it's actually the same decade. It's like he's covering the Bush administration in the 2000s in these two movies. It'd be a great double feature. I prefer this more than The Big Short. And for me, with The Big Short, I really enjoyed it. But there was a lot of moments in The Big Short that took me out of the movie in terms of the editing choices. There was a lot of stuff, jokes that didn't work for me, like canned laughter in one scene, cutting to some random... a random music video, one another, like a rap music and this and that. This film does this a bit, but less so, and a lot of the jokes are more on point, except for a few I mentioned earlier. Like, one of the funniest moments, I thought, was when the narrator, who we'll get to in a second, at that point, that'll be a spoiler moment, but when the narrator explains how Dick Cheney was good at convincing people of these outlandish, crazy ideas. And so they cut to Christian Bale, and he's talking about how he's telling Gerald Ford that they should put wigs at the ends of their penises and go out to the White House front lawn. And you're like, what is going on? Like, what is this doing? And you realize, oh, he's pitching a crazy idea. They're not really being serious. It's a satire. There's moments like that where, you know, they go for it like that. Or another scene that worked really well is when they're ordering food and Alfred Molina, yeah. Alfred Molina is giving them the meal, the choices for what they can have for dinner, and they're all like Guantanamo Bay and all these different kinds of ways they can engage in warfare in Iraq and the war on terror. You know,
yeah,
it's pretty clever. I think that's
Well, go ahead, it all works because you know both of those scenes you mentioned, they all work. Even the Shakespeare soliloquy, which it's not a great scene, but still, it all gets to the point, it all moves the story along, it all explains the point in a very entertaining way. And that's really kind of why I find Adam McKay such an interesting filmmaker, because for some filmmakers, like, the material to them has to be taken serious. It has to be, it has to mean something, and also it's kind of in that standard way where it has to be dramatic. It has to have the, dun dun music. It has to, a lot of filmmakers feel they have to, over dramatize. Whereas McKay realizes that if you over dramatize or go overboard on realism of the event, you'll lose the audience. Because on one way you'll lose the audience because you're going for the Oscar cliches, or on the one swing, you're just boring them to tears. So Adam McKay is trying his best. And for me, I call it experimentation. I think this experimentation also kind of started with, oddly enough, Anchorman 2, because Anchorman 2 is kind of a parody of, Fox News itself, how it's ran and all that. I don't know if you saw Aquaman or Anchorman
no, I didn't.
2.
The funny thing is I couldn't get to the first Anchorman. I always stop at the same scene. It's that gang fight scene they have. I always stop there. I couldn't get through Talladega Nights. I didn't like Step Brothers at all. It was interesting when he made Big Short, because I hated Step Brothers. I did watch the whole thing back when it came out. I didn't like it at all. Not my kind of comedy. I just am not into that. Same thing with Austin Powers. Like, for me, I like that in SNL, but when it goes on for more than, 8 minutes, I can't get into it. So, not my kind of comedy. But
I just had to pull a knife out of my chest. But okay. I would argue that the experimentation of, of blending comedy with, not necessarily satire, but also, political themes, started with Anchorman 2, and then, of course, he kind of made a big come out with The Big Short, where he threw everything at the wall. Everything was thrown at the wall, and there was nothing, there was nothing left, on the wall. There was nothing left to throw at the wall. And I feel like that's why, the editing choices and everything being cut to, was so extreme, is because Adam McKay is trying so hard to get everyone's attention, and to be fair, the movie is still great, But I can see your point where, you know, where cutting to random, you know, pop artists or songs, you know, or even popping to Margot Robbie talking about, you know, Margot Robbie in a pool, in a hot tub, naked, explaining something. I can see where, you know, that can be just like, you know, what are we doing here? But to me, it's all, I feel like McKay is trying to experiment in order to get to an end goal, which is trying to deliver, you know, the most sophisticated themes and ideas about the nature of politics and government and how it in the nature of power and how it all is a construct. I think he's all trying to do all that in an entertaining way, and he's trying to do it in a way that's entertaining, but not so entertaining that you don't leave the theater, you know, going, yeah, well, you know what, they solved the problem and I'm going on my day.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, it is a challenging movie, especially the ending, which we're going to get to at the end of the review. But speaking of that, it's interesting because Green Book just won Best Screenplay at the Golden Globes. Now, what? I haven't seen Green Book, but I can tell you it looks like Driving Miss Daisy. And have you seen it? Am I right with that? Am I wrong?
No, is it I that don't. Kind of movie I haven't had. I have not had time to see Green Book.
Okay. Now I'm all right. I don't want to give it crap before I see it. Yeah, I don't want to give a crap before I've seen it, but with that, yeah, I know. And with that said, I mean, but I have a feeling though it's not as challenging as a movie as something like this or something, you know, like, and so yeah, that it does beg the question. I mean, is this movie too much for people? Is it like in terms of challenging? Let's just skip ahead to the end to the last scene. It's not really a spoiler because this is all history. People should know how it ends, you know. You know the before. I mean, excluding the Jesse Plemons twist, that last scene is essentially the Adam McKay taking quotes from that interview that he had. And basically, it's Dick Cheney justifying why he what he did. And, you know, this is what I did. You can hate me for it, but this is, you know, why I thought it was the right decision. And so, you know, this is a movie that probably appeals to liberals because it criticizes the Bush administration. Sure, that's obvious. It's Hollywood, you know. At the same time, though, you know, a person watching who's more conservative may appreciate that last scene. You know, they may appreciate how they kind of humanized Dick Cheney in certain moments in the movie. Some ways they didn't. It is a comedy. But, you know, this isn't a movie that has a good versus evil or just this very simplistic kind of, like, take on history. It's very complicated. It's morality, you know, it's a Machiavellian, you know, the ends justify the means. It's, you know, morality is many shades of gray. It's like that kind of movie. So how do you think people will respond to this, whether or not they're liberal or conservative? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, to me, I think the ending is even more deeper than, you know, what you can take despite your conservative views or even liberal views. Because, I mean, obviously, yeah. If you're conservative, you're looking at it as, you can look at the movie as well. It's a humanizing version of Dick Cheney because in the end, he, you know, he's doing all of this because he feels, you know, he feels a certain, he's kind of, I don't want to compare Dick Cheney. I don't want to compare Dick Cheney to Thanos because that's a comic book character.
that's a comic book character,
but they both have the kind of the same in this movie. They have the same ideology, in that, you know, the ends justify the means, in that, you know, in the kind of, you know, father figure that must, you know, do what's right. Father figure knows best, and I know what's best for the country. I know what's, you know, what needs to be done. Their ideologies are very much in that they feel righteous in their, you know, in their goals. And I feel like when you know, so from that conservative angle, you see it builds all greatly to the end where, you know, where if you look at it, it's wonderfully built because now everything's been justified. And of course it's a justifying statement. But on the liberal spectrum, it's a very terrifying scene because we've seen this man who was righteous and still, you know, changed the course of history for not really that good. And
Yeah, and just mentioning the Jesse Plim- Go ahead. Yeah, sorry, I was interrupting. It's hard to... go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, because I keep pausing. But for me, the deeper level is... For me, it's Dick Cheney looking at the audience and kind of manipulating, saying, please forgive. It's his way of saying, I know I'm guilty, but I'm manipulating you for forgiveness. I'm manipulating you and emotionally, you know, getting to you because I want the satisfaction that I did the right thing after all is said and done. And that's really like how I look at the ending is it's a small weak man who spent his entire life doing something he felt was righteous and burned so many bridges and destroyed so many lives. And now he's being confronted with it. And now he's, you know, basically manipulating us, the audience, into thinking, okay, you know, but it was all for the good. You have to understand. It's almost like a spousal abuser, or the like. If an abusive husband is like is like trying to guilt people or guilt everyone into, you know, or trying to manipulate everyone into like his side. So that's how I read the movie. I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah. That's how I read it.
Yeah, I kind of get what you're saying. Yeah. Just real quick, because we kind of skipped it, the Jesse Plemons twist of him being the narrator. It was a surprising twist, kind of creepy, the way they were doing that with the heart transplant. It was well done. I'm not sure if I would have done that if I was directing the movie. It would have been my choice, but okay, fair enough. You know, that it was a surprising, you know, well done twist. And it kind of adds to the, you know, they mention him being a veteran. I'm not sure if that's actually true in real life, if the guy was actually a veteran, but it is kind of what they're hinting at is the idea that these people sacrificed their lives to fight in the war, as of where Dick Cheney gets a heart transplant at the age of, you know, who knows how old he was at that time. It's an interesting way of ending it, or towards the ending. And so the other thing I would say about the ending is that, you know, the reason why I think it's the last scene so much better than, let's say, The Big Short, where Adam McKay's kind of just condemning what happened, is that, you know, in The Big Short, you know, I actually agree with the bailout. That was the right decision. It sucks, but, you know, having read enough about economics and that time, you know, Bush, his Treasury Secretary Paulson and Geithner, they avoided the next Great Depression in what they did. And so while he condemns the bailout in The Big Short, you know, he doesn't have that moment where, like, okay, well, here's our side of the story. This is what, you know. It's just kind of for liberals to kind of, like, okay, say, you know, okay, you know, that it's more fodder for them. In this, it's more challenging because you have, you know, Christian Bale playing Dick Cheney, speaking to the camera, breaking the fourth wall, saying, you know, this is what I did. And so it's a great way of ending a movie like that. I think that's... Go ahead, yeah.
Well, the heart transplant scene is very much McKay's... You know, it's very much, you know, an homage to Michael Corleone becoming the Godfather. Becoming the... You know, as he severs ties with his people, and then even burns, you know, bridges of his own family. So, in a very devastating way. I mean, because the true cruel thing that Vice presents, you know, in with Cheney is it, the one good thing that he, you know, that we see in the movie that he does, the one like outstandingly like. Like, thank God he's not, like, this cruel. He outdoes it, or he throws that away at the end of the movie. And that's why And honestly, I mean, that's the most chilling part of that whole heart transplant scene. I mean, a lot happens in that one scene. A lot of betrayal, a lot of backstabbing, you know, in his, like, you know, continuing the legacy of his power, of his name. But it's interesting how, but that's literally, you know, McKay's, I forget what it's called in kind of the film world, but it's the Michael Corleone scene, Michael Corleone becoming the Godfather type scene.
Yeah, the baptism scene, you mean.
The baptism.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you compare it to Godfather, because I wasn't thinking of that when I saw it, but I would say that the biggest comparison would be, I think there's even a quote at the beginning where it says something like, beware the quiet ones. And that's a good comparison, because in Godfather, he starts off very quiet. I mean, that's in, you know, Michael Corleone is not, you don't expect him to become the character he is by part two, and that is a good comparison, the character arc. In that, and you know, the ending's depressing in part two. It's depressing in this too as well. You like the scene where they're kind of throwing the daughter under the bus. You know, the daughter who comes out. And it's a very humanizing scene too. Halfway through the movie, when she does come out and they accept her for that. Even his harshest critics give him credit for that. You know, that's but it just shows the way, you know, it's the Machiavellian kind of approach to power that they have. That's it. Just shows that, you know, that's what they'll do to win. So
it's that,
and just
you know,
the final point I would make too. Go ahead. Yeah.
It's that you know, we gotta topple over each other just to get to the throne, or to keep on the throne. In that kind of way, it's.
Yeah, and I'll finish off the review with a comment on one scene and the overall feel of the movie. Speaking of the Machiavellian aspect of it. You know, the ends justify the means. There's a great scene in the movie where once he becomes vice president, there's this montage almost of them explaining how have connections in Washington, D.C. They've planted in people in every, you know, part of the administration, handling all the stuff like, you know, Secretary of Defense being Rumsfeld, the energy, Secretary of Energy, you know, and he has a room in the House, the Senate, you know, it's just he has his arms in every aspect of Washington, D.C. And, you know, I would recommend this movie to the people running for president in 2020, the Democratic side, because we haven't had a Dick Cheney or someone like this since Lyndon B. Johnson. And if you watch the movie they made about him, played by Bryan Cranston, All the Way on HBO, it's very similar, not similar in terms of the character arc, but the way they approach the actor. And it's a similar kind of feel, though, you know, the ends justify the means. This is what needs to be done in politics to win, you know. I think that's what's the takeaway from the movie, is that politics is a very dirty business. It makes a lot of people angry, I get it, but I find it fascinating. You know, this is how it works. You know, this is how if we don't even pay attention, this is how stuff like this happens, because people didn't know at the time that Dick Cheney was kind of, you know, had so much control in the White House at first. So.
Well, but the movie also forgives the audience in the first 2 minutes by saying, you know, we live in kind of a culture where people are working more and more, and, you know, more hours, and, you know, and what they want to do with their time is to go out and just forget, you know, for a few hours about work because we work so much. And so,
yeah.
So it's hard for us to stay focused, especially nowadays when there is so much going on. There's so much going on in the political discourse, so it's hard to keep up. And also, what's going on in the political discourse, you know, even back then was not, you know, a sight to be seen. It was not a sight to behold. It's not, you know, it's not. Yeah. It's not comforting. It's not, you know, it's not an easy, and I'm understating this, it's not an easy approach at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the end credits scene was great too, because that's how, you know, the guy brings up, hey, isn't this just a, you know, it is. Yeah. On Facebook, it's like the ending credits scene is like a Facebook conversation played in real life. Like, you know, a liberal and conservative fighting, while meanwhile someone's asking, hey, did you hear about the new Fast and Furious movie? I mean, it's perfect. Yeah, I love the end credits scene. So yeah, that was Vice. Go see it, everybody. I mean, I thought it was more entertaining than Aquaman, Bumblebee. I know I'm the only one who, it's not the same kind of movie, I get it, but yeah, it's makes you think, you know, challenges you, so.
Oh, I think it's one of the best movies of the year. I think this is one of my top 10.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I just think, you know, McKay strikes a perfect chord in how, you know, I think he's nearly perfecting his formula of how to make entertaining movies, but also like trying to, you know, give people very deep, thoughtful political, you know, analogies and you know, and breakdowns of, you know, of government and how it works so people can be more educated. So I feel, I feel like,
and while this movie's marketed as a comedy, go ahead. Yeah.
I just, that's what I'm just getting to that point is I feel like, you know, McKay is getting to greatly to that point of where, you know, now he will be able to do entertaining movies.
Well, it was marketed as a comedy, and while there are funny moments in the movie, quite a few funny moments, it is serious in a lot of, in a lot of scenes. I mean, it even has a torture montage in one moment. It doesn't take it as far as Zero Dark Thirty, obviously, but it does address the stuff it should address and the tone that it should, you know, be in. So, yeah, great movie. It's going to be one of my favorite movies of the year, definitely my top 10. I haven't seen that many movies this year, so I need to catch up, and we can do a list of that later. Yeah, everybody see Vice. Now in the next video we're doing right after this, it'll be posted soon. We're going to pitch, a movie, a Trump biopic or a Trump movie directed by Adam McKay. If it were made 10 years from now, after this whole thing is settled, stay tuned for that. It'll be a lot of fun doing that. And, until then, see you guys. Okay, that was...
All right, everyone, thanks for checking out our discussion on Vice. And I will have links to the descriptions for our Bat Symphony and the video in the description below. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find me on Twitter at MovieKale, and you can also follow me at The Youth Critic. And you can also follow... And on the Tribute to the Podcast at KH. Thanks, everyone. Back with you soon.
When you have power, people will always try to take it from you, always.
Nothing can break me down. I'm the man.
Are you even more ruthless than you used to be?
Right at the God. First in command. My testimony. When I take the stand, who's the man?
So we're gonna do this thing, or what? I mean, is this happening?
I believe we can make this work.
Hot damn.